Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Welcome to Walking Between the Worlds. And today, we are speaking about the magical world around us. And I am Al Mean, and this is our 13th show, covering that which lies behind the appearances. Now, during the fall of man's existence, he began discounting the subtle information revealed to him by the magical kingdoms of the unseen realms. A time of great awakening has dawned upon this planet, as it has ascended through multiple higher realms as the pivot point of life in the cosmos. It is time for man to become aware of and respect the unseen kingdoms that make life possible in our environment. Now, our very first 13 segments of shows that began in February of 2007, we dealt in some great detail with the various kingdoms of the unicorns. We did an entire show just on fairies and the Devic kingdoms. We spoke in the languages of the angels. We gave the vocabulary of the dragons. But even though you can find this for free in the archives of Seventh Wave Network, many kingdoms have since come to light that did not make it into our fairy tales, our mythologies, or even our oral traditions, for they were so well hidden by the mother that, in fact, they only recently came to light. Why did she do this? Well, let's see if we can uncover that today, for many of them held great gifts and great secrets, and they were awaiting a certain level of consciousness from us to be able to come forth and bestow them. We have with us today Paul St. John, and Paul, welcome. Thank you for compiling all these questions. So sweet of you.
It's my pleasure, Almi. I think we will definitely get to the Lost Kingdoms in sort of the mid-range of the show. First, I wanted to ask a question, though, that I've already asked on the very first show of this 13-week series that fits very well with this topic. Perhaps you can answer it again for our listeners, because I think they'll be very excited to hear your answer. And it has to do about whether we'll ever be able to see with our eyes these magical creatures that you write about, whether they be the ones of like the fairies and dragons of common mythology, or also some of these newer kingdoms that are coming into our awareness.
Yes, I there will. I'll explain why. In the first week of November 2007, Mother uncovered the following situation. The cosmos had become, for various reasons, top-heavy. In other words, the unseen, lighter realms were by far more numerous, which forms its opposite pole. Of the denser realms, man is the densest. So this meant that the proactivity of the cosmos, the doingness to promote life, was carried by the few on behalf of the many. So Mother rectified this in November, and she did this by taking 1/7 of all realms and kingdoms and making them physical. This has created a very unique situation in which 1/7 of the fairy realms are physical fairies, and 1/7 of the dragon realms the same. So you see, they have, of course, their own magic and to create invisibility for themselves if they need to. However, those with pure hearts who previously lacked the ability to see between realms can now do so by learning to write their language, learning their names, and we've given them in the gift of the unicorns and our book, Aruba Firina, Book of Fairy Magic, for example, and cultivating a relationship with them. So does that answer it?
Yes, Yes, it does, Almeen, and that's very exciting news. That's why I wanted people to hear that again. I am, however, still curious why up until now it has been so difficult to perceive these beings of other realms, even for many people who are deeply involved in metaphysical work. I've personally even received communications from a hidden kingdom, but it was so subtle that it was almost intangible. So why has it been so difficult to pierce these veils between the realms? Are there still some kind of blocks in place?
Well, firstly, if one has a communication from a kingdom, you may not be able to translate it. Someone in my class might receive a communication and wonder, since it's their first time, whether or not it is valid. They are fortunate in that I have the ability to translate the ancient languages and those of the hidden kingdom. So if I translate them, that validates it for them. It further validates it when I show them copies of the same language produced by other masters in my classes worldwide. But now, what is the most important work? You know, to sit there as a channel to telepathically receive these beings' communication, or to send out the love and the praise and the gratitude to the Infinite Mother? The answer is clearly the latter. So even changing the world by changing ourselves is far more life-enhancing activity than to simply indulge their communications. But if you were, however, to spend a lot of time receiving their communications, you will in a few months certainly have visitations by them, which you will see either in dream form or in front of you with your physical eyes or during meditation. In other words, it took a very concerted practice in the past, but now, however, after Mother has made 1/7 of these beings physical, it simply takes cultivating a good relationship. So I just want to re-explain something I said a little earlier in this answer. Don't substitute this as your spiritual journey. It's a wonderful, fun practice. It's also very good because it releases the tyranny of left brain. But it is not instead of the work that you do with self, the deep, meaningful analysis you do of what occurred in your day, the love and the praise and the gratitude you send to the infinite. Those are spiritual practices. This is not supposed to take the place of, even though it's fun.
I see. That's very helpful, Almeen, to have those sort of those priorities that, and it's good to know that it takes some practice to communicate with these beings, because I think many people have this expectation that it will become a natural occurrence to see them with our physical eyes as our perception expands.
Yeah.
I'm curious about this because it seems like as one leaves behind human relationships with those who no longer have harmonious perceptions, it would seem natural that one might compensate for the sense of loss through relationships with beings in other realms.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because it is very much available to have relationships with beings in other realms. Some of my dearest friends and are not, if you will, in physical form. But especially now that those who represented illusion and who were tricking mankind by pretending to be benign have been removed. And we've spoken about that often on our shows. So, you know, for those of you that are newly tuned in to us here, please go and take a look at those. But the goal, however, for the masters who are arriving into mastery and even beyond into the God kingdom while in embodiment, as is increasingly happening, is that they bring divinity into their everyday activity rather than live their lives with 1 foot in and 1 foot out of physicality. It's very important that the proactive pole amongst humans fully live their lives in physicality to bring balance back to the kingdoms of ascended mastery of all races as well as the God kingdoms. See, when the time comes, when it's not an effort, you don't have to sit in meditation to be able to communicate in different languages, to understand those languages with your different friends in other realms, then there is no division. It isn't a matter of one foot in and one foot out. You know, you make jokes with them, you go on with your work, you bake cookies, you might burn cookies, you know, and they're joking, you know, oh, you know, your timing's off with something, and you might answer back and then go on with your work. So, you see, it's a matter of focus. Firstly, focus needs to be in the physical, even though one may make friends in the non-physical. Light workers must shake off the tendency to value the non-physical more. And secondly, those perception getters who are the primary way showers among light workers have often deliberately foregone the expandedness of seeing into other realms. For doing so requires being on the horizontal axis of existence, which tends to make one less discerning, less analytical, less able to cope with everyday life. If I were to give an example of that, your art majors in a college are more likely to be on the horizontal axis. Your computer specialists, your lawyers, etc., in the same college are on the vertical axis. They're more analytical, more discerning. And they do this because they have deliberately, temporarily eliminated such vision within themselves. And the great gift of these individuals is that they can analyze what lies behind appearances and not take life at the same face value that the masses do. So, you know what? Let's take a quick commercial break here for our first time, and we'll be right back with our second segment. Please rejoin us then, folks. We are delighted to have you.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to lead the bliss to teach. Still fewer in the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almin. To learn more about Almin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And we have with us today Paul St. John, and many of the questions that he compiles for us for these shows on specific topics are from you. We so appreciate always when you write into us, and we try either through the multiple question answers that go out to our email list or our radio shows to answer them, if not those that we can answer directly if they are of a more personal nature. But we do attempt to answer everyone. We invite you to join our email list by signing up online on www.spiritualjourneys.com. Paul, welcome back to you too, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Almin. Before the break, you were discussing how many way showers, a lot of the more advanced light workers, have deliberately foregone the expandedness of seeing into other realms in order to make it easier for them to cope with everyday life. So I'm curious about those light workers who generally do not experience this ability to perceive more subtle realms and also find daily life to be a struggle.
Well, okay, let's look at that. See, the problem, even with advanced light workers, is that few know how to live a happy life. Our parents haven't taught us, nor have the schools, nor are there many philosophers, poets, or writers of any kind that have accomplished it themselves. And the best they can do is to theorize about life. Few actually know how to live it well. So the key is awareness. One cannot feel love, praise, and gratitude when one is not aware of what is around you. It takes away of focusing your vision. Life is made up of little details. By all means, want a palace in the sky and then work to make it so, but the quality of the journey along the way is really the important thing. Study the pure emotions as given in the Ring of Truth. And find what would evoke those feelings in you. And then deliberately put those things into our lives. Happiness lies in noticing the little things. And Paul, I might just add another issue in here. The secrets around what the earth is, who she is, where she came from, they are the most profound anywhere in the cosmos. I spent hours last night being shown in Revelations things about the earth which I can't even at this point mention. She is so not what she seems. She is the way shower. She is the cradle of civilization. And she is far more than that. The hot spot in the cosmos is right here. Every being in the cosmos would like to be on earth. Mother has actually had to place a shield around the earth. There are four angel goddesses guarding the shield. Alien ships may no longer come in and out. You know, the hostile ones have perished during the last few years of ascension. But even the benign ones would colonize it in a moment. But humankind is such a special archetype that the grid must be protected, that is determinative of how that species behaves, because otherwise they become non-archetypal of the cosmos. I hope I said that word correctly. But anyway, we've got to realize how very, very important it is to be on Earth. A lot of light workers want to go home. This is home if ever there has been one.
Yes, I think that's a very important thing to remind all the light workers listening. Certainly, I need to be reminded of that sometimes myself, so thank you, Almin. And I'd like to continue on in this vein of sort of piercing through the illusion with my next question, in a previous show, I believe it was January 2nd, you mentioned that reality is divided in two ways. One way is in terms of accessed awareness, which divides life into seven different realities. And the second way is in terms of degrees of density. For example, an angel is less dense than a human. Can you share with the listeners why the densest level, the level of physical form, is so seductive to so many people? Why so many people have the tendency to value it more than content?
Well, the problem is that they are more familiar with the outer senses than the inner. There are five outer senses. The inner senses, there are 7 times 96 inner senses. So, you know, the 96 times 7 inner senses should be outweighing the 5 external ones, which would allow us to access what lies behind form. Why form gets so predominantly accessed by 5 senses is the tyranny of left brain that thinks that it knows. You know, people do not always take equally kindly to the advanced material that I represent in the books. I simply write as I live, day by day, and as you know, working side by side in my office here in Newport, I spend about 6 hours a day working in the other realms and many more than that on this side. So, you know, on the physical level. So, as a bridge between worlds, I have attempted to make it more real. But, for example, in Ireland, we have, you know, bookstores that have signs up about me because they feel that what I say is blasphemous. Blasphemous is a common word that has been used through the Dark Ages and into the present for anything that does not conform to your held belief systems of religiousness. And, for example, God the Father. Of course there is a most magnificent God the Father, though for the longest time I sought him and could not find him, because he was not in the cycles of the fall. And in the cycles of the fall, we had imposters, ones that were representing illusion, parading as him. But he is mother's first creation. But for me to speak that there is something preceding the father of existence that is predominantly female, because existence itself is predominantly female and the infinite mother represents everything, and he is the externalization of all that is within her that is masculine, is for them very blasphemous. This is an example of how, you know, we have to let loose the tyranny of our belief systems. We say we seek for truth, but we seek for that which conforms to our already held belief systems at times, and then it only thickens those prison bars. My books are designed to set people free from those prison bars, and until it is, the life that is indwelling life that is so vibrant and mystical and exquisitely perfect cannot be revealed. They will only see the imperfection overlay of form.
Yes, that's it's quite a shame. I mean that that it can't be. In some instances, it's so difficult for some people to see beyond, to see that the beauty of the perfection behind it.
But Paul, may I ask you to do me a favor?
Absolutely.
Could you explain to the listeners what you meant by the first part of your question about how realities are divided? Because I don't think that that was very understandable.
Okay. Well, it was just basically to put context to my question. And you do discuss it in the show on January the 2nd. Where you mentioned that reality is divided into two ways. One of the ways is that it's in terms of accessed awareness, how much awareness one can access, which is divided into seven different realities or seven different layers of light, which can be accessed, and they're all shielded from one another.
Okay, so you know what I was trying to find while you explained that is I was trying to get my hands on an Aruba Firina book because I actually thought it might be a good idea for folks to hear the fairy language.
That would be wonderful.
You know, because some of them might have heard it in their subconscious.
Yes.
But perhaps we'll tackle that one after break where I will actually read it to them.
Do you want me to continue on with that example, with the previous explanation? I think that's pretty much it.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
So what would be your next question?
Well, you actually were right on the ball because people have actually asked. The next thing I was going to ask was about some inquiries from listeners about the pronunciation of both the fairy language and mother's language. particularly they've asked about the fairy language, if you have any sort of a recording that can help people pronounce it.
Okay, well, you know, in the Aruba Farina book on page 16, the pronunciation is written.
Okay.
Of the fairy language, but also it's very close to mother's language, as given in the Ring of Truth. And they're identical in pronunciation. So the revised edition of this book is now available, and in the future I'll be making a recording of these languages. But you know, Paul, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back after these messages.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness. The state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Helmi's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almin. To learn more about Almin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our next segment of Walking Between the Worlds. And Paul, back to you regarding any other questions that you wanted to ask about the fairy language.
Well, Almin, I think it would probably be a good time to maybe read a little bit, because you've already answered that the pronunciation is in the Aruba Farina book on page 16, I believe, and also it's similar to the mother's language in the Ring of Truth. So maybe your idea would be good to do right now, having...
Yes.
If you have a copy
of that book.
I got
my hands on one, yes, during the break.
Good.
All right, well, let's do that. And I want to explain to the folks that I was in the middle of finishing Ring of Truth, and I was told by the mother that it had to be in the printer's hands in December 1st, but I was only told that in August. So I was writing day and night on this book and then was contacted by a group of fairies and told that on the 13th of November, for 1 week, they would allow me into their world where we could take interdimensional photography, which we have in color in the Aruba Farina book, where they have taken, we could take the photographs and they would give us our magic. Now, we had magic given from various fairy groups. And so we just want to tell you that the language, because we had magic from the fairies of our world's fairy realms, fairies from Lyra, and then there were two groups of fairies from Lyra, and one were Earth fairies that had migrated to Lyra, the star system of Lyra. And we had the magic of the fairies from Venus, the magic of the fairies from the Pleiades, and the magic of the fairies from Andromeda and Arcturus. So each one of those fairy groups had different way of writing, which we show you in the book, as well as we took their photos. Some of them are different sizes. We also have their languages, and I've taken down their magic exactly as they gave it to me. Even though it might sound like a child speaking at times, that's the way they sounded, that's the way I wrote it. So let me give you the message that came from the Mother of All Creation on the 1st of November 2006, that's on the back page of the Aruba Ferina book, so that back cover, so that you can hear the similarity. Beleshvi Kraunak Suretvi Kle Husep Strava. From my hand to yours, this gift of magic is given. Herevish Ulechvi Trehup Sespa Uvabishtarech Nen Uhursat Palavi. That humankind may join my family of creatures in wielding this sacred power. Beshtrach Vaurish Treuspa Vata. Bring joy to hearts and claim your inheritance. Kranuch selbi heresvi, kletsut abreherech nun, selbavi averset strava. Forsake your doubts, it cannot be misused. Gretsa urechbi strarum pelech hishvra straha. It is the moment for you to become masters of your destiny. Now, let's read spell number one from the 14 spells of the Earth Fairies from Lyra, so people can hear how that's pronounced. And incidentally, the Earth Fairies from Lyra have the same language as our current Earth Fairies. They had kept the same languages even though they were removed eons ago. Bels bruvak blik breverest helvesh vi akbar Urklatvik, Nerst Helspa, Urutvi Herespa, Es Krukklabi, Vilsnek Uret Ble Ufraba, Arha Nurklit Heres Vilst Ufba. Forget not the ancient ways of yore, that which once was has been restored. By saying these words you open a door, the magic will flow for you to explore. Say them before each spell that you do, and the magic of fairies will flow through you. So that's a little example for the folks back home.
That's beautiful, Almeen. Thank you very much.
Yes.
can you answer, perhaps, for us a question from one of our readers, which is there a connection between extraterrestrials, the fae of myth, fairies, and divas?
Okay, well, you know, it's interesting. Not many people ask me about the Fae, and I have worked with her. The Fae of myth is, in fact, the fairy queen of the water fairies of the ocean. I have spoken to her on a few occasions. There are specific fairies assigned to specific plants, not generally identified as divas. Then there are divas who are between angels and fairies in evolution, but in actual fact belong to the angelic realm and not the fairy realm. And these might be assigned to work with the group spirit of a specific plant species. Divas also tend to work with all the plants in a garden or a forest, for example. For larger than that, angels would be assigned. As far as I know, the ones coming from other planets are from the fairy realms. So, I have encountered only one group of extraterrestrials, in fact, quite recently, who work with the fairies on their planet as a means of contacting light workers on Earth. They boosted the fairies' abilities and sent three of them to Earth to represent them. Other than that, I've not had any communication from ETs about fairies being on their planets. You know, now, in The Gift of the Unicorns, it explains very carefully how the fairy groups mentioned in the Aruba Ferina book came to be on the other planets. See, I had no idea because I didn't get to translate that into 2007, why all these fairies from other planetary systems were returning back to Earth. And they were like they were returning home. In fact, by the end of that week, you know, millions of them had gathered in a cavern in the crust of the earth, it was like a massive reuniting. So the history keepers gave us that information, and it's in the gift of the unicorns as to why they were on the other planets. But it's clear from those transmissions that those fairy groups which recently returned to Earth did in fact originate here eons ago. The diversity within the fairy and elfin kingdoms on Earth is much larger than anything I have encountered anywhere else, but it's due to the diversity of the plant life here.
Wow. There's certainly a lot going on that we're not aware of. It's really amazing. Thank you, Almin, for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Some readers have been surprised by the information on Thoth that you share in the Gift of the Unicorns and are not clear what side he is working on now. One person asks, if Thoth's allegiance to the mother of all life is ambiguous, why would one pursue entrance to the halls of Amenti if this is where he is? Would you care to comment on this for our listeners?
Well, first of all, you know, this path that I've walked, because the path goes outside of anywhere my belief systems had gone, I was equally surprised about this. It was very disillusioning to me. Thoth only showed his true colors and unbelievable cruelty and you know, malignant intent in August of 2006. After years of interacting with him, he had me entirely deceived as to his true nature. Secondly, according to the Mother Goddess of all life, he was one of six arch-villains of the cosmos, and had for eons strategized to win first the allegiance and governance of the earth, and then expanded it to include much of the rest of the cosmos as much as he could manage. Now, his father, Enki, was basically not a bad man, but was entirely under his son's control. But the halls of Amenti is a different story. According to the history given, it was built by Mother for the Lords of Light. Thoth ceased to exist as an individuation within the cosmos during the early part of 2007. You will therefore not encounter him anywhere. The seven lords, later became nine, have also ceased to exist as they became self-serving and their functions became obsolete. You will find there, however, a most luminous, impeccable god, who, although very shy, will be delighted to see you, and this is the god Horlet, also known as the Dweller. And the opening the doors of heaven, revelations of the mysteries of Isis, should be completed in February of 2008 and ready to go for sale, and we will give many answers to those questions about those. Let's take a short break now, please. It's time for commercials.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego. In 2000, in the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer in the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
You've been walking between the worlds with Almin. To learn more about Almin and the mystical keys of life, log on now to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And Paul, thank you for helping us again today, and please continue with your questions.
Sure, Almin. At the beginning of the show, you mentioned the Lost Kingdoms, and you gave a brief description of who they are and why we haven't heard from them before. I was wondering if you would like to continue, maybe give a further description of that, and also of some of the groups themselves. Maybe you can mention who they are and a little bit about them and what they're here to share, if you'd like.
Yes. Let's jump right into who they are.
Okay.
That's a fun part. Some of the, well, the very first ones that were discovered were the Darklings. In December of 2006, I was afforded entry into the vast halls that are the libraries of Isis. And just prior to that, I had made contact with a group of being called the Darklings. And the reason they were called the Darklings is that these incredibly beautiful, pure little beings, they're tiny, they're about the size of a pea, live in large clusters in the bottom of the ocean. They appeared to me, and they had a greenish face, the flattish sort of nose features that you would find perhaps in Africa. The ears were very flat against the head, and I saw them, but I saw them as life-size, even though they are very diminutive, but they're very, very powerful with their magic. Mother hid them in the darkest portions of the ocean, and they were given the capability of observing the cosmos and especially the events on Earth, and to record the history of the cycles of the fall. So the Darklings came to me first, and then contacted some of the masters in my classes, and gave a song about the return of the mother. One of the masters got that. The other one got multiple transmissions. The Darklings have spoken directly to me on occasion. The Darklings themselves are the forerunners of the Isis mysteries, because the history they gave me when I went into those vast libraries with its tablets of gold, tablets of green material. I don't know what the material is. It isn't emerald. I didn't know where to begin. And I asked Mother what would best dovetail with the information that they were releasing to me about the Earth. I ended up writing the Isis book simultaneously as I did the information from the Darklings, which is the second half, the history of the cycles of the gift of the unicorns. But they're small, they're dense, they're not like fairies that are very ethereal. And those are the Darklings. The second little beings that came forward were the Elamakusanek. The Elamakusanek held spirals of light that would be placed within the waters of the earth. It would be placed between the bodies of man. It would be placed in the bloodstream of man. And it would enable man to metamorphose into this superhumanness that Mother intended as the next level for the species to be in. And the Elamakusanek are as small as the Darklings. They also live in the ocean, but they're more ethereal, like little fairies, tiny, tiny little beings. And when they're happy, they live in large colonies. The colony glows with light. You have these clouds of light glowing in the ocean bottom, very, very deep down. Those are the Elamakusanek. Now, we also had the Bekba Varabishbi. Those are the tree people of Lemuria. They are very blonde. Both men and women have long blonde hair. The men's are mostly cut straight across at the shoulder length. They are so fair, they look almost albino. Of course, they are not. And they're very tall. I seem to remember they were something like 15 or 16 feet tall. I can't quite remember the height, but they were very tall. The ones that appeared to me were a family unit, a mother, a father, and a child. I recognized them from the artwork they gave me way back in 2005 when Mother instructed me and the masters that I was working with at the time to create large wheels with thousands of symbols on them representing groups of people and beings in hierarchies that would open the membranes between the realms so that the earth could ascend through. They gave me their symbols then. And, you know, we asked them why they moved out of the Lemurian society into the trees, and they said the trees were kinder. They wear clothes that are made from bark, but it looks like very fine material. They are totally vegetarian, and their features are humanoid, beautifully elongated bodies and very refined features. So those are the Bekba Barabishti. Then the other ones that came forward were, they have the Brahmanhood. And, well, actually, you know, there were ones that came before that. Let's give them in order. The Nitzka Belavek came out right at the time the Elema Kusanek and the Bekba Varabishpi came out. The Nitzka Belavek came out. And they have rounded childlike faces with an owl-like appearance. One appeared to a goddess in class in a small coach. We call these gatherings we have classes, beloved ones. There is no word really to explain what goes on there. But one appeared to a goddess in a gathering in a small coach. Their homes of the Nitzka Belavek have the barest minimum. Their gift, and why Mother hid them until now, is that they brought subtle coded information that was placed in the life force center and in the DNA. So after this, there was the Stibble Haspava. I actually think before that happened, there were two beings that occurred. One was the Jongalabruk. The Jongalabruk are the cat people, the lion people. They've given me copious, copious writings of theirs. They are masters of frequency. And they brought the frequency to lay in to that ocean, the oceans of consciousness around the cosmos, so that we could leave the cycle of ascension, descension we'd been on. The Jongalabruk brought some two frequencies. The Glanesh Viva, who look like little embryo light beings, brought two frequencies. The Brahmanhut brought a frequency. And then the other is the Stibble Haspava, which brought a frequency. Let's take them in orders, much as time will allow. So the Jongalabruk are the cat lion people. They have given a fantastic magical device called the Estangle Uvafli. And you can read about them in the Isis book, The Mysteries of Isis Revealed, and see their calendar and their clock. Some of these old writings of these beings of the Jongalabruk, the cat people, still exist in some of the old alchemist libraries in Europe. The Glanesh Viva are like embryos. They're like little soap bubbles floating with these embryonic little beings inside. Yet their appearance reflects ancient knowledge and, like the Brahmanhood, so much love. The Brahmanhood say they sing the song of Mother's Heart. They have heart-shaped faces with large, solemn eyes and slender, beautifully proportioned bodies and ears that stand out above their head in a slight point. The Stibble Haspava, Paul, of whose language you write, the Stibble Haspava look like larger elfin beings. They're about 4 foot tall. And they were hidden in the moon all this time. But only some of them kept the faith that Mother would one day let them out, and the others did not, and perished when she finally brought them forth. These beings have all brought phenomenal gifts to humankind and the whole cosmos. It is with gratitude that we have included their writings in our books, and some of it is in the Unicorn book, but some of it is in the Isis book. So, beloved ones, we've come to the end of a wonderful hour together. Thank you so much, and we hope you can join us again next week.
We hope you have enjoyed today's show, Walking Between the Worlds with Al Mean.